All right.
The, thank you. The appeal in front of us now is Chambers versus Bringenberg. Mr. Korowitz, you're going to be appearing for the appellant. And is there a division of time for appellee?
No, Your Honor.
And you'll be arguing, Mr. Sprague?
I will be.
Very well. Do counsel have any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Very well. You may approach and you may proceed.
May I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal? Your Honors, counsel, may it please the court. My name is Brian Korowitz. I'm the attorney for Angie Bringenberg. Mrs. Bringenberg is the beneficiary of a transfer on death deed that was executed by her mother, Eleanor Chambers. The primary issue before the court is whether a transfer on death deed is void if not signed by the transferor's spouse. The answer to that question is no, even if the property was a homestead under Nebraska Revised Statute 40-104. Such a requirement would defeat the purpose of a transfer on death deed, which is to act as a will substitute. There are three key characteristics of a transfer on death deed. First, as I mentioned, it is a will substitute. The purpose is to allow for the same post-death transfer of real estate as a will without the need to go through probate. There's no real debate on this issue. The comments to the Uniform Act, the legislative floor debate, and the interim study by the legislature all confirm that a transfer on death deed was intended to be a will substitute. Second, it is not an inter vivos transfer. A transfer on death deed does not convey legal or equitable title while the transferor is alive. The transfer on death deed can be revoked at any time up until the transferor's death. Since it is not a transfer on death deed, since it's not an inter vivos transfer, a transfer on death deed does not convey a homestead interest. Third, property transferred by a transfer on death deed is subject to claims to which the property would otherwise be subject to at the transferor's death. This is a key point. Those interests include a spouse's right to claim an elective share of the transferor's estate as set forth in the Uniform Probate Code. The right to an elective share is set forth in 76-3415 subsection A. This section specifically incorporates the Uniform Probate Code sections 30-2313 through 30-2319. Those are the sections that include the right to elective share and the calculation of the augment of the estate. The fact that a spouse can claim an elective share under 30-2313 was acknowledged by the Legislative Committee when they reviewed the Uniform Property Transfer on Death Act. In this review, the committee stated, quote, "The transfer on death deed is expressly subject to the elective share of a surviving spouse." Here's why that is important. Prior to 1974, the Homestead Act, of which 40-104 is part of, included a statute that provided a surviving spouse with protection from disinheritance. That statute was 40-117. Under that statute, when a will devised real property that was a homestead and titled in the decedent's name, the surviving spouse was given a life estate. In 1974, when Nebraska adopted the Uniform Probate Code, 40-117 got repealed. In its place under the Uniform Probate Code, we created the rights of a spouse to have an elective share of the augmented estate.
So elective share can be, could include specific property, or it might be money, right?
That is true. That's absolutely true. It could include payable on death accounts, which is another form of a non-probate transfer, of which the transfer on death deeds were intended to mimic.
Does the Transfer on Death Deed Act anywhere refer to section 40-104 or its requirements?
Not anywhere. There's not one mention to the Homestead Act within the Transfer on Death Deed Act. The only statutes that it mentions go back to the Uniform Probate Code, and it mentions those in several locations. And the key point here is if a transfer on death deed was subject to section 40-104 and had to be signed by a spouse, there'd be no reason to make property transferred by a transfer on death deed subject to the spouse's right of elective share. And I'll go one step further. And I'll go this step further because appellees cite title standards, and they also cite another publication by another attorney. I think it'd be malpractice for an attorney to require a spouse to sign a transfer on death deed. The reason I say that is By signing a transfer on death deed, the spouse would actually be waiving their right to make a claim to elective share. When you look at Uniform Probate Code Section 2314, subpart C2, the augmented estate does not include property transferred by the decedent where that transfer has been joined in by the surviving spouse.
Let's be careful about that. It would only be malpractice in your argument if the spouse that joined in signing the transfer on death deed did not intend to waive elective share.
I agree with that, Your Honor. I agree, but that spouse may not know the effect of their actions by signing that transfer on death deed.
Well, it could be malpractice, but it's not necessarily malpractice.
That is true.
A more accurate way.
That would, yes. And point is, if the spouse signs the transfer on death deed, the augment of the estate would be reduced by the value of the real estate, not increased by it. So the spouse would effectively reduce their part of the elective share. Appellee's arguments are untenable as 40-104 and 30-2313 cannot be reconciled. If a transfer on death deed had to be signed by a spouse, then the conveyed property would not be included in the augmented estate.
When you have spouses and one of them dies, what is the legal status of the marriage of both the survivor and the decedent after that spouse passes away?
Well, the marriage it ends. I mean, it no longer exists.
And in this situation, a transfer of death deed, does the property transfer before the death or at the time of death?
It transfers at the time of death. It does not transfer anything before death.
So at the time the transfer occurs, was the transferor married?
It doesn't matter if they were married or not. When we talk about when these interactions all happen, you talk about the transfer of death deed does not take effect until death. The marriage ends at death. The whether there's an overlap at time, I don't know that it matters. But effectively, the marriage ends, the transfer happens, and I don't know that it's related.
Doesn't the Homestead Act set up to regulate the transfer of property of the married couple? The 40-104, that's to protect the homestead exemption, correct?
That's to not to protect the homestead exemption. And there's confusion because homestead is used in different Nebraska probate codes in different locations. I'm sorry, Nebraska statutes, sometimes in the probate code, then also in the Homestead Act itself. Effectively is to keep a spouse from, you know, being out on the street. And this act was created back in the 1880s or some time frame with the general understanding, hey, we need to protect the spouse. And back then it was intended to protect the woman in the relationship because of the view on property rights at the time. And so that's what it's intended to do. But they had a different statute when it comes to wills, when it comes to disinheritance. And that was 40-117, which gets replaced. It's repealed. And now it's under the probate code, which is.
And I believe your argument you previously made, I may be inartfully saying this though, is that the Transfer of Death Deed Act also has protections, being that any claims that exist against that property survive that transfer under the deed.
It has the same protections for a spouse that the spouse would otherwise have if there had been a will. If the property was devised through a will and it was property that was owned solely by the spouse who did the will, just as in here with a transfer on death deed, you have the same protection.
You may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Justice. May it please the court, members of the court. I'm J.L. Spray with the Mattson Ricketts Law Firm here in Lincoln. Along with my partner, Christina Usher, we represent the plaintiff appellee, James Chambers. A few key facts I wanted to be sure were clear in the record, from the record. From 1995 until the moment of Eleanor Chambers' death, she and David Chambers were married to each other. There is no evidence that David ever gave up his right to the homestead. That's different than where he waived his right to the homestead allowance in the prenuptial contract. He never waived the homestead per se. It is clear from the record that Eleanor and David considered South 65th Street to be their homestead, their home, their residence, where they intended to return at the end of the day.
In the prenuptial agreement, did Mr. Chambers waive collective share?
He did. But what they did that would come exactly into play in this case is they added a mother may I clause. So if a conveyance had to be signed by both spouses, they agreed that the other would cooperate. Of course, that hinged on the fact whether they knew about it going on or not, which in this case he didn't. It was done behind his back. Finally, it is clear from the evidence that this was done behind Mr. Chambers' back without his knowledge, with the idea that the original joint tenant property that they owned together before it was sold and converted into this property was designed to basically secret the property away from Mr. Chambers. Now, the action, of course, is quiet title. The issue to be decided, I think everybody agrees, is whether the transfer on death deed was void for want of a signature and an acknowledgement of the appellee's spouse, in this case, David Chambers. There is no dispute that there is no signature on that deed. Now, going to the interrelationship of the statutes, which I think is probably the key question, the Transfer on Death Act incorporates into it the requirement that the deed has to be inter vivos, the same as an inter vivos deed that is recordable. So that calls into play 76241, which requires that in order for a properly recorded deed to be effective, that is not void, there has to be the necessary acknowledgement. And then, of course, if the essential elements of a recordable deed include the signature of both spouses under the Homestead Act, then it all fits together in one simple package, and we don't have to run down all the bunny trails of the elective share or of the probate code and the timing of when it was enacted and what the situation was before the probate code and during the probate code. And you don't have to do all that. The answer is real simple. It tracks right through the statute, and the conveyancing statutes are what are predominantly incorporated into the Transfer on Deed Act, not the probate code. They refer to the conveyancing statutes and how you execute a deed and what constitutes certain essential requirements of a recordable inter vivos deed. That's in the Transfer on Death Deed Act, is the requirement that it be a recordable inter vivos deed. You cannot get away from that. So I wanted to...
I beg your pardon. I do have a question. And when you say inter vivos and recordable, are you intending to say it is recorded during the lifetime of the grantor? Would that be consistent with a TOD?
Well, so first, the facts in this case is the deed was executed on February 7th. It was filed on February 8th. The decedent died the next March 3rd of the same year. So it was in fact executed and recorded during the lifetime of the surviving spouse. Now, with regard to your question, all acts to complete the transfer were done on February 8th. There was nothing more anyone had to do to effect the transfer except die.
Except for the death.
Except the death, that's right. But it was completed then. So if, for instance, I transfer a property in a life estate, and retain a life, or transfer it a remainder and retain a life estate, that transfer is filed and completed. It's done and it's of record. And only thing that has to happen is to file a death certificate to prove the death.
But the transferee has no property interest under the TOD deed, does she?
No, and it's revocable. But of course, you can undo a transfer with a retained life estate if you get the remainder person to sign off on it.
But you don't need the transferee's signature to undo this.
Correct. That is a difference. I don't think it matters, but you're right. That is a difference. But it's also a transfer or conveyance that takes effect at death. So, for instance, if I transferred my house to my child and retain a life estate and my spouse doesn't sign that transfer, it's a void conveyance because my spouse didn't sign the transfer. This is the exact same thing. That's why we don't need to rip up 150 years of Nebraska law to make a change here. That frankly will confuse the bar. Obviously, they're confused because they already have a position contrary to the appellants vis-a-vis the title standards, and it confused people as to what they can and can't do legally. Right now, we have a very bright line. If you're married and you convey your homestead, both spouses have to sign and the signatures have to be acknowledged.
Can you respond to Mr. Kurwitz's argument that there would be no purpose to making the transfer on death deed subject to the elective share if there was a requirement that, that both spouses?
Thank you for reminding me about that question, and it's a good question. So an elective share pulls all kinds of non-probate assets back into the estate to make the division between the two spouses, the estate and the survivor. And the elective share is designed to basically encompass everything. In the surviving spouse's share under the elective share, the homestead does not have to be there if it's already been conveyed. So, and it doesn't have to be considered under the statute. But an elective share is not about one specific asset. It doesn't address the homestead at all. And so the difference is, I'm not sure I'm explaining this just in an understandable fashion, but the difference is the elective share is about the whole. It could be a giant billion-dollar estate with a $100,000 house in it. Here we're talking about one asset, the homestead, and that's why the act applies to it, because it is the homestead. Very important asset.
If there had been no prenuptial agreement in this case, and if the transfer on death deed was done as it was done, Mr. Chambers could have elected elective share and the property conveyed, transferred under the transfer on death deed would have been part of the elective share, right?
That is correct.
And again, in the absence of the prenuptial agreement, if the transfer on death deed was used and he did not, or he did join in the execution of it, it would not be part of the elective share.
Correct. And that's the key, Judge Justice Castle, is that if he knowingly participated in basically the gift of this, if he'd knowingly done that, signed it, and had it acknowledged, right, no question. But that isn't what happened under these facts.
But then we have the prenuptial agreement where he's already waived elective share.
But not the homestead. So he waived the elective share, but not the homestead. And that's the key distinction. The elective share is a big pool of assets, and the homestead is the homestead only. And that's the difference. It's the home.
Isn't the confusion in this matter all derived from how we're going to interpret a transfer and death deed, whether it's going to be interpreted like we do all of our deeds or real estate law, or if we're going to treat it more of a probate question, say this is, it's not a deed, it's a substitute for a will. Isn't that where the confusion all arises here?
Right, with two caveats. The legislature has told us this is not a testamentary transfer. That's in the statute. And they've also told us and instructed us that it's to be treated like any other recordable inter vivos transfer. So the legislature's been very clear here on the instructions on how this is to be treated.
Well,
it incorporates all the conveyancing, yes.
You said they said it's not a testamentary transfer. They said it's, maybe you didn't say it exactly that way. What the statute 3407 of the Trust Deed Act says is that a transfer on death deed is non-testamentary.
Correct. Right. Which I take to mean that all the issues of capacity to contract as opposed to capacity to execute a will come into play, but it's non-testamentary. And they also told us that because they want us to look at the conveyancing statutes and recording statutes that we cite in our brief extensively that are the requirements the legislature's given us for how to handle and treat these conveyances. And in particular, with regard to the malpractice notion, I guess I'd be guilty of it, I think it would be malpractice to not get the spouse's signature, given the state of the law. And in this case, it was done. So in conclusion, whether intentional or unintentional, this was a clever attempt to skirt around Mr. Chambers' well-established homestead rights. And as this court said in the Mutual of Omaha case in 2017, a valid acknowledgement of both spouses must appear on the face of an instrument purporting to convey or encumber a homestead of a married person, or the instrument is void. Thank you.
Thank you very much. How much time remains for rebuttal? Very well, you may proceed.
I'm going to try to hit Mr. Spray's points one by one here. First of all, Mr. Spray gave the court some background and said this is done in secret. First of all, there's nothing done in secret. I'll explain why, but number two, wills are done in secret all the time. There's no requirement that a spouse be told what's in your will. That would be silly. But his point that there's no evidence. 2 days after Eleanor Chambers died, 2 days, Jim Chambers sent a text message to his son, a text message that was not produced until after discovery, depositions had already been taken in this case. That text message said that David made a deal with Eleanor that she gets the house. That's a text message that David Chambers' son, Jim, sent to his son. So there is evidence. David Chambers knew what this deal was. In fact, he told Angie Brandenburg, David Chambers told Angie Brandenburg, that the house was in Eleanor's name to protect her from Jim Chambers. Second, on the point about non-testamentary, the reason the statute says that, if you look at the comments, is to make it clear that it goes outside of probate. People didn't want to have a confusion as to whether or not this should be a probated asset. That's why it makes that comment. As to the title standards, folks should also look at 763415. That section specifically contemplates joint owners of property having only one of the joint owners signing a transfer on death deed. What would the title standards say about that? They would say a deed is void if it's not signed by both joint owners. A transfer on death deed act specifically contemplates one out of two joint owners can sign a transfer on death deed. Then it tells you when that takes effect. Then lastly, if I still have time, I see I'm out. Any questions?
Here's not. Thank you very much. The appeal is submitted and counsel are excused. And as this is the last case of the day, we are adjourned. Thank you.